morning. This is First Coast Connect. I'm Charles Griggs, sitting in for Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, a conversation with Jacksonville City Councilwoman Randy Dufour. 549-2937 is the number to call. Then later, a preview of the Universe Soul Circus. That and more is just ahead. But first, this hour, Jacksonville City Councilwoman Randy Dufour joins us now to discuss everything from the investigation into the attempted JEA sale to making Jacksonville more resilient. What are your questions for her? Give us a call, 549-2937, or email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweet us or make a comment on Facebook. We'd like to hear from you. Good morning, Councilwoman.
Good morning.
Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Great, great. So you're fresh off of a council meeting last night, and we talked a little bit about some of the things that were going on. But let's talk a little bit about JEA first.
Sure.
Where are we with the investigation on the your committee, your special committee?
Well, we've had two committee meetings to date, and we have asked for the JEA to provide us with about a list of a little more than 80 areas, if you will, of concern documents. And they to date, we have not received a single one. So we continue to push to get information from the JEA.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, this special committee is chaired by Councilman Aurora Diamond,
correct,
and also your colleague, Brenda Priestley Jackson, sits on the committee as well.
That's right.
And your expectations for this investigation would be what?
Well, the charge was to figure out who knew what, when, and get to the bottom of how this all transpired.
Okay. And so what, you know, right now, have you had any surprises of information that's come out of this investigation?
Well, I think the biggest surprise we found out from was between the information we received from Nelson Mullins, the law firm of Nelson Mullins, the first committee meeting, and then again from Mike Brost, who used to be the head of both the electric and water I think he'd been with the JEA for over 38 years. He's now retired. But both of those witnesses, if you will, discussed the fact that at that July 23rd, that infamous July 23rd board meeting where the board decided to go forward with the ITN process, that Aaron Zahn, who was, as you know, the CEO, and mm-hmm. Brian Wanamaker, the CFO, represented information to them that was really incorrect. They basically took data points out of context and led the board to believe that there was this so-called death spiral and that it was in the best interest of the JEA and the community as a whole to go forward with the ITN process.
Yeah. One of the things that people in the community are talking about are the potential ramifications that would have occurred as a result if this process had been led to go forward. What are your thoughts on, can you give us some scope or scale what your thoughts are or what the ramifications would have been had this process been allowed to continue?
Well, in my opinion, it was a corrupt process from the very beginning, and it was based on manipulation. It was based on false information, and it was really created in order to manipulate a certain outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a corrupt process, you're going to have a corrupt result.
Yeah.
And it was not going to be in the best interest of Jacksonville, Florida.
So your concerns now are primarily focused on trying to retrieve the documents that you've requested?
That's correct.
What happens if you don't get those documents?
Then we're going to have to subpoena the JEA, which is really amazing to me that we would have to basically subpoena ourselves, right? Because mm-hmm. the JEA is owned by the community. And then if that doesn't work, then we're going to have to go to the state attorney's office. There's no other option. We also are in the process of trying to get the deposition of Melissa Dykes, who was the number two at the time of the ITN and who is now the number one, and also Paul McElroy, who was a former CEO of JEA. So those two witnesses will be essential and critical in determining how this came about.
Mm. Has the JEA provided any explanation regarding why it's taken the delay for the documents to be produced?
The explanation they've given us is just the sheer volume, but I find that incredibly hard to believe, given the fact that when we had this PUP committee mm-hmm. meeting that was, we call it the Diamond Salem committee meeting, and it was all on the performance unit plan, and then that meeting, they were able to get almost 1,000 documents within 3 days to us. So the fact that we've received zero documents, to me, is just further evidence of the fact that the JEA is not being transparent.
So let's dig a little deeper into what happens if you don't receive the documents. We understand that you've instructed General Counsel's office to ask for subpoena the documents. General Counsel pretty much represents the JEA as well, correct?
That is correct. That is one of the areas that, you know, I think that's a weakness of our consolidation that has come, been exposed, if you will, through this process.
Do you think this will be a mechanism used in order to produce a further delay?
Well, I think my personal belief is this whole thing is a delay. Okay. I mean, absolutely.
Okay. We have a few phone callers and we'd like to try to take a call now. You can give us a call as well. If you would like to speak with City Council Member Randy DeFore as we discuss the JEA special investigation. And we're going to take the call. Good morning. This is your own First Coast Connect.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, I apologize. Yes, y'all doing a great job with investigating the JEA. My concern, two questions here, is conflict of interest. And number, the main one here that I have is would the JEA board pick a less qualified person to operate JEA when you had three of the top people running JEA during that time, not in a position to take charge and move the city forward. Thank you.
Thank you for that. That's Doc on the north side. Yeah. Let's get some conversation about that.
Sure.
Because a lot of people in the public believe this is where all this rooted from, the stem from was the selection of someone who many believe to be unqualified for the job as the CEO of JEA.
And that came out in our second meeting with Mike Bruce, who, with 38 years of experience, was asked the question, was Aaron Zahn qualified for that position? And he said resoundingly no. Yeah, I mean, the JEA is the eighth largest utility in the United States. And the fact that Aaron Zahn was chosen with absolutely zero experience in electric, you know, he had some experience on the water side of the business, but zero experience on the electric side of the business is just unconscionable.
So what about accountability in respect to actions taken by a CEO under these conditions where many believe, or at least people have testified, that he wasn't qualified for the position? And if things that you all uncover during your investigation say that you know, there were not only steps that were taken that were possibly potentially illegal, how do you handle that?
Well, we'd have to give to the state attorney, and as you know, the state attorney's already has begun looking at that and punted it over, if you will, to the federal government. So the federal government is looking at all these actions. In fact, that was one of the reasons why some people didn't want to have the investigative committee, because they felt like we might get in the way of the federal investigation. It's worthy of answer. We need those questions answered.
Do you think you get in the way of a federal investigation?
We don't know. I mean, I can't worry about that. We have to go forward and do the best we can. And along those lines, we have to, you know, we have to talk to those board members who appointed Aaron Zahn in that position.
Okay. Susan's in Mandarin. Good morning, Susan. You're on First Coast Connect.
Yes, many of us think Mayor Curry was directing the JEA board and the JEA executives to sell JEA. So if they were taking their directions from the mayor, they probably thought that they were doing a good job. And it seems to me, of course, I don't know if that's true or not, and hopefully you will uncover that. But it still seems to me that the mayor has too much power, and we need to change the way the JEA board will be appointed. And I'm wondering how soon the city council will make that happen. And my second question is, do you feel Jason Gabriel's office let you down, especially regarding the PUP? Thank you for being on the air. I love what you've been doing.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for the call and the questions. Actually, I heard three questions there. Yeah. So do you think it has anything supported what many people believe that this investigation leads to the mayor's office since he appointed Aaron Zahn? And the other question was obviously the general counsel question, which we covered. And
And the change in the board.
And change in the board.
So the first question concerning the mayor, you know, this mayor was very, I believe, transparent and open about the fact that he thought there should be a conversation about privatization. You know, I'm sure he meant an adult conversation. Mm-hmm. And we did see when he first came in that he removed all the board members. So there's no doubt, I don't think anybody can deny that he was for talking about privatization, at least talking about privatization. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a healthy, I'm not, to me, that's a, we should have a healthy discussion. We never got there, and that's unfortunate. But, you know, on the other side, I think the warder should never have been a part of the conversation, but we can talk about that another time. The second part, the board itself, the board structure itself, there is legislation before the city council to change the number of board seats that will be chosen by the mayor. And so the mayor will have a certain number, and now the city council will have a certain number. And that's in an effort to try to ensure that this does not happen again. And then the third question was, remind me, what was it?
She asked that you think the general counsel
let
you down.
I think the general counsel actually, in terms of the PUP, I don't know, we haven't really discussed or even looked into the his actions in relation to the strategic planning, but in terms of the PUP, the performance unit, he was actually saying he had to fight against the opinions given to him by outside counsel. Mm-hmm. So he did not let the city down as relates to the PUP.
Okay. So involved in all of this is, of course, you know, the board resigned, most all of the members resigned, and now you're in the process of putting together or approving a new board. How is that going?
It's going well. We are meeting. I'm on the Rules Committee. We are meeting with, I think, everybody, actually. This is so important. All the members of the City Council are meeting with the proposed candidates for the board. And I can tell you, for one, I'm asking some very difficult questions.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that a lot of people in the public are asking is that this process that's taking place right now in terms of approving the board members is the same process as before. They prefer you, or at least explore taking action on changing how board members are approved prior to approving a new board, selecting a new board. What are your thoughts on?
Well, in a perfect world, that would be great. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're getting hit with bond ratings reductions because we don't have a board in place. So the first thing we need to do is get a good board, an independent board, and that is where we're going to, you know, I can tell you that I personally am going to ensure that we do everything in our power to ensure that these individuals are independent.
Okay. The number to call is 549-2937 if you'd like to get in on the conversation with City Councilwoman Randy DeFore as we discuss JEA. We'll transition to some other areas in a few minutes, but I'd like to get a few more questions in about the JEA investigation. But right now, we'll take a call from Tom. Tom?
The board members of the JEA.
Hello, Tom, you're on the air.
Ah, yes. Good morning. I had two questions, one on the current topic, which is I was wondering if there is any plan contemplated currently that would restagger the terms of the JEA. Also, I'm concerned about the Lot J development, and I was wondering what the opinion was on that, considering that Shad Khan's commitment to Jacksonville seems pretty minimal at this point.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the question. We just talked a little bit about the board composition.
Right.
You anticipate some changes in how the board staggered?
No. Thank you, Tom, and it's good to hear your voice. Tom comes to city council meetings often.
Great.
We're going to keep it staggered. So we're keeping so as these people come in, they're actually, their terms, or their length of term will differ depending on the position they're taking. I hope that makes sense. So
yes,
they're going to remain staggered. The question about Lot J, we have not seen, it has not been presented to the city council, the plan for the Lot J. I can tell you this from a business perspective, which is, as you know, I'm a business person first. I'm going to be looking for the return on investment for the city.
Yeah, I would imagine that because of all the controversy around JEA and the scrutiny that the city council has been put under as relates to how you're supposed to scrutinize the deals like privatization, a project this size will receive additional scrutiny.
We would hope. I mean, I'm really banking on the fact that it's going to go through DIA and Lori Boyer, who I have tremendous admiration for. I know that if it goes through her committee or her the DIA, I think we're in pretty good shape.
What we've heard is from the Jaguars or from Strad Khan's people, Mark Lamping, is that they are very much anticipating getting started with this project in very quick fashion. How does that square with the due diligence that you have to do as a council?
We're going to do our due diligence.
Okay. All right. All right. We have another call from the West Side. Elborne, you're on the air. Good morning. You're on First Coast.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. My concern and question is, did anybody ever had a chance or try to investigate the high cost to consumers throughout the process of this discussion to sell JEA in an effort to inflate the price and the value?
Thank you for that question. Any thoughts about the potential cost, rising costs for services for JEA throughout the process?
You know, I looked at it from the water side of the business, I felt was irresponsible for us to even consider selling the water side. If the data that I looked at suggested that if you privatize water, the cost to the customer increases by 3 times.
Yeah. So what about the cost? There's been much conversation about how much money has been spent so far how much money was spent by JEA on privatization or executing the PUP plan, the $10+ million. What about accountability there? What do you all see? Do you see anything on the horizon, maybe some opportunity to recoup those costs?
I know that the OGC is looking at that. And let me tell you, the costs are going to be way more than $10 million. I mean, the Pillsbury law firm billings were $10
million. Yeah. Yeah. So this isn't over.
No.
By a long shot. What happens if you don't get, you don't complete your investigation by the end of the council year, the end of June?
Then, I would hope that we'd continue. It depends on who the new president of the city council is, and it will be their prerogative to continue this committee or not. But I can tell you that I'd be shocked if it wasn't continued.
Mm-hmm. You think the right thing to do would be to keep the current committee members in place for the investigation to continue and continue
yes.
throughout until it's completed?
Only because we've invested so much of our time and energy in this process, and we have the knowledge. So, I think if they give us all the documentation, mm-hmm. we can get through this process pretty quickly. But if they don't give us the documentation, if they keep dragging their heels, it just will continue to be a blemish on this community. And, let's hold this JEA accountable mm-hmm. and get the information.
Okay. Well, we're going to switch to another topic now. Last night you had city council meeting. One of the topics that took public comment was the half-cent sales tax referendum for
yes.
Duval County Public School Systems for facility improvements. Where do you stand on your vote to support or not support putting it on a referendum?
I did not vote to withdraw it. I don't know if you recall that or not. Because I think it's time to put it on the ballot and let the voters decide.
Okay. And so one of the things that's key here is that going on the referendum for the November elections.
Correct.
Do you think that, in your opinion, do you think all of this was done really just in a way to hold off until November 2020?
Certainly, I think that no one wanted to pay for a special election. I think, we didn't want, that was going to be $1 million cost. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people felt that was too much money for an election. So let's put it on the November 2020.
Yeah, what's the difference now between this year and last year as a result, as it relates to why the district and the city was able to basically settle on moving forward with the referendum?
Well, I think part of the issue was that the school board sued the city and had a very strong opinion written by a judge that said, school board, you're an independent authority and you have the right to hire your own counsel.
Okay. We have another call on the line from San Marco. Bonnie in San Marco, thanks for calling First Coast Connect.
Hello.
Good morning.
My question is about the JEA and the overall bid process city for professional service. It seems to me that someone that's has seen the professional bid process, that we're not watching it as close as we need to be watching it. And if the city council given any consideration to either asking their auditors to be more involved or that they set a cap on the amount that they review for the bids.
Thank you for the question. You see any problem with the way many of these vendors were selected?
Yes, and that's coming out. So what we found out is they would hire a law firm, and then the law firm would go out and hire the McKinsey, for instance, or some other of these. So that is illegal, and I know our OGC is looking into that as we speak. In addition, our auditor was very involved. Our auditor, the city, and I say our auditor, I'm talking about the city council auditor, that's how we were able to identify the issues with the PUP. What we, I don't know if you recall this, but Carrie Stewart was on this show and basically told our community that they didn't have to provide our auditor, city council auditor, with the information that he requested. So we have now got legislation before city council, which we're, which will pass, I'm sure of that, that basically says that if there's information that's been requested by the city council auditor, that JEA, you have to provide that information within 48 hours.
So there's a separate committee that's working on recommendations for review of how JEA does business. In other words, before anyone looks to privatize or look for that process, they'd have to go through city council first versus the way it happened. It occurred this time, which was, it was a normal process. They put in an ITN, and then they were going to get the best offer, and then they were going to come to city council and get that approved. What other types of things do you see that that you need to, because it sounds like procurement is one of those things
it
that needs to be
procurement.
Addressed.
I tell you, I don't know if you remember this, but I actually asked, I have never seen a company or a corporation, what have you, a body, try to sell theirself through a procurement process. And I was told that that was perfectly appropriate. So we are looking at all of those issues. Michael Borland's group is who you're referencing. Actually, we had a great meeting this week where we were told that there were several lines of businesses that the JEA could go into in addition to their current, which I don't know if you were, we were told by the JEA that that in fact was not true. So we have a lot of opportunities here going forward, and we're going to take them.
Yeah, it looks like there were several different lines of communication. You know, they were telling one story to the commission, and they were telling another story to the public. And, of course, you guys were there on the, trying to decide which how you should proceed.
Right. There is no doubt that the information that was represented to us was flawed.
Yeah.
And that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. Okay. Number to call is 549-2937 as we speak with City Council Member Randy DeFore. You're also participating on the Special Resilience Committee, Committee, with being chaired by Councilman Matt Carlucci. Talk a little bit about that, and what are your expectations that you see out of that committee?
There have been some great, already success from that, one of which is that we will be, I believe, we'll be hiring a resiliency officer for the city. That's something that had been requested in the past and had not been funded, and I think that will be funded in the future. And we're looking for tools of how we should be better resilient. So in terms of, you know, we need hardening. How do we harden our coastlines and our riverways? And there's a lot that I don't know that I look forward to learning.
Yeah. Many people have talked about, some of the future development that we have potentially planned here may be impacted by our resiliency and climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Lot J, for instance, is built on the floodplain down there, projected to be built on the floodplain. What are your thoughts on how we should approach these types of projects, especially in a community where we are continuing to grow? Jacksonville is a very attractive city for many, not only companies, but families to move here. How do we handle all of that?
Well, I think we learn from our neighboring counties. If you look at Monroe County, they've had to address this. There are other counties that South Florida has really addressed they've changed their code requirements in terms of how you build. I mean, you have to build up. And also, we can't just fill in our wetlands anymore. I mean, there's a lot of things we can do.
Yeah, Definitely. We have another caller. Wayne is in Mandarin. Wayne, good morning. You're on First Coast Connect.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I believe we should have more engineers and technical people on the board of JEA. We seem to focus on politicians, financiers, and attorneys, and JEA is fundamentally in the business of physics, right? Converting energy and distributing it, cleaning water, cleaning wastewater, and distributing that. Someone like Mike Brost should be considered specifically for the board, and I appreciate the fact City Council is having more insight into that specific function. I also think we should very specifically consider analytical analysis, such as offered by UCF, into compound flooding with respect to the risk that we could occur if we have a storm that is counterclockwise in rotation over the St. Johns River.
Hey, thank you for that call, Wayne.
Well, those are great comments, and we have so many smart people in our community.
Well, that's an important point regarding the makeup of the board. People yeah. believe that it should be more experts on, you know, sitting on these boards of utilities, independent authorities, I should say.
Right.
And, you know, this would sort of give people more confidence in the decision-making that's coming out of these boards.
I think that's a great suggestion. Mike Brost really was an incredible witness. He is honest. And we need his skill set, so I agree with you.
Okay. Wayne is giving us a call this morning in Jacksonville. Good morning, Wayne. I'm sorry, Mark.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. And so I think I have more of a comment that's going to pose and turn into a rhetorical question, but here we go. How is it that Mayor Curry has been able to step aside from all of this and, I'm going to say, opinionated, pretend he didn't know anything about it, which leads me to come to two conclusions. The first one is he's not telling the truth about that. And the second one is, if he is telling the truth, how then is he competent enough to be the mayor of a city this size with a budget this size and not have his finger on the pulse of something as large as this and as polarized, I use that as opposed to corrupt. So there's my rhetorical. And is it too hot? Is it too sticky? Is it too dangerous to go after him? Are there bigger fish to fry at the moment? Are there larger things that we can uncover? And then he may or may not be next in the conversation. How is it that this isn't circling and cycling around him as the leader of the city?
Okay, thank you for that comment and question, Mark, and we appreciate the call. We covered that earlier. You're in the process of doing an investigation, but you're going to go where it takes you.
We are. We're going where it takes us.
Yeah, and we'll see if it goes to the mayor's office. It does. If it doesn't, then, you know, you believe you have done your due diligence. Right.
That's correct.
Okay. We have Wayne. I'm sorry. I want to say Wayne. I love Wayne. Doug is at Jacksonville Beach. Good morning, Doug. Thank you for calling First Coast Connect.
Yes. I'm not sure whether you addressed this in the program yet, but my question is regarding the moving forward with the development of the JEA headquarters. I realize that there's a private developer that is developing it, and JEA is going to lease the property, but are we still contractually bound to that? Is it feasible? Is it something that is being looked into?
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for that question, and that's a great question. So what are we going to do with
this? Thank you, Doug. I recognize that voice, Doug. Reality is they're breaking ground, mm-hmm. and I'm very sad to say that, because I think that should have waited with this new board, but they went forward with the contract, and they're moving forward.
Do you think you're going to find out anything new related to in your investigation related to the new headquarters?
Very possibly.
Okay, and what happens if you do? I mean, like you said, you were right in the middle of it. Breaking ground is happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's a disappointment. I really wish they had slowed that train down. Mm-hmm. And wonder why they didn't.
Okay. Tom is in Riverside. Oops, I lost him. How about that? So Mark is in Mayport. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I just had another JEA question. It's kind of fallen off the radar. In the dark of night, about a year ago, they killed the net metering program, which completely disincentivizes rooftop solar. If I want to put solar panels on my roof and make excess power, they will give me 30 cents on the dollar for that power, and then they will turn around and sell it to my neighbor for the full dollar. Now, I understand we have to maintain the grid for everybody, but 70% to maintain the grid seems ridiculous. I want to know if we're looking at that, if we're going to bring back net metering, what's going on?
Thank you for the question, Mark. I do recall there was controversy around how the JEA approached the net metering controversy because they felt like this was going to hurt revenue over time, and they felt many members it wasn't scaled up enough for it to make a difference to the public. It was too expensive, I should say, and it has had an impact on some of those folks who have invested in solar. Do you think you're going to uncover anything in the investigation that has anything to do with some of the ways that JEA could have mitigated
yes,
earning
it? Plant Vogtle is another one. Yeah. I'm not sure Plant Vogtle is as big of an albatross as it has been represented. That came out in Mike Bro's testimony.
Okay. All right. So I think we have Tom back, and Tom is in Riverside. Good morning, Tom.
Hi. I'm concerned that all of our emphasis on resiliency, and I think we need to be concerned about that, but our emphasis on that is causing us to avoid the issue of what are we as individuals and what are we as a community doing to contribute to the problem of climate change and rising seas. We can't depend on other communities, other countries, other cities to solve our problem for us. We need to work on reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, on driving dozens of miles each way to work. What are we doing for mass transit here to promote more efficiency?
Thank you for the question, Tom. Do you think the work on the resiliency committee is going to cover how we deal with fossil fuels? We know that the JTA has some exciting projects going on regarding...
They really do.
Yeah, transportation. But do you think we'll move forward in a way that Jacksonville can get excited about sort of reducing its dependency on fossil fuels for the way we move around in
That's
town.
A great question, and I'm going to bring that to the committee because I think I, for one, hadn't really thought of it in those terms.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, I just wanted to say thank you for being here, but I wanted to also find out, what are your thoughts on your first 8 months in the council?
This
has
got to
be a lot, and you're drinking from a water hose, huh?
Been 8 months. I was laughingly telling someone I felt like it had been 8 years. I think we're growing very quickly as a council. We've had to. We got literally thrown in the fire. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're going to see a stronger city council than there has been in the past. And I think the city of Jacksonville is going to benefit from that.
Yes, and we appreciate you being here this morning, and we appreciate your work on the council. And you got your hands full with all of those committees, especially you still have your regular committees, rules, and what else are you on?
Finance.
Oh, my goodness, that's coming up. So thank you again to City Councilwoman Randy DeFore for being here on First Coast Connect. We'll be back in a few minutes with our call to action on climate change. You can stick around for that if you like.
I would love to. Thank you.
Thank you very much on First Coast Connect.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. This evening, Adam Rosenblatt, Assistant Professor of Biology at UNF, will give a lecture called A Call to Action, Jacksonville, the Climate Crisis and You, at the St. John's Cathedral. It's being presented by Green Spirits and the Climate Coalition of Jacksonville. He's here now with a preview, along with John Burr, from North Florida correspondent for Invading Seas. And we still have Councilwoman Randy DeFore here joining us, since we're going to be talking about climate change resiliency. Thank you. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you, and thanks for having us. This event that we're going to be having tonight at St. John's Cathedral, 6:30 p.m., encourage everybody to come out if you want to learn about climate change and what's projected to happen here in Jacksonville. It's a collaboration between St. John's Cathedral and the Citizens Climate Lobby. And basically what we're trying to do is reach out to the faith communities here in Jacksonville and see if we can motivate people to get involved on this issue. And that's about it, really.
Yeah, so what is going to happen? What are our expectations if we don't do anything? Because we talked a little bit in the previous segment about some of the climate change potential impacts on our business development that are going on around town. What are you seeing? What do the public need to know?
Yeah, so the main message that we're trying to get out is that the impacts on Jacksonville are going to be pretty severe if we don't do anything as, you know, a local community, but also as a national and international community. Here in Jacksonville, everybody is pretty much aware we're going to see some serious effects from sea level rise, serious effects from increased strength of hurricanes. Where we are right now is projected to be underwater by the end of the century if we see the rates of sea level rise continue increasing as they have been for many years. And the thing that I try to highlight for people as well is the heat. I mean, the heat waves in this city are going to be pretty severe over the summertime in the next, you know, couple decades going on to the end of the century. We're talking about maybe 90 days a year where the temperature's above 105 degrees heat index every single day. And that's severely going to impact how people function in this city.
So what can we do? I mean, Councilwoman DeFore is here, and their committee is going to be working on actually listening to a lot of the items that you're going to be discussing. What is it that you think the community can do in terms of building its resiliency?
Yeah, so the Resiliency Committee is doing a great job so far, as I can tell. Hiring a chief resilience officer is a big thing, and then also getting the city to put together a comprehensive climate action plan, right, for how the city is going to deal with all of these issues going forward. And the way that people can get involved is attending these meetings, right? The Resiliency Committee meetings are open to the public. There's a 45-minute, question and answer period, I think, at the next meeting, which is on March 26th at 2 p.m. at City Hall. And people just need to make their voices heard and let city council know that they're concerned about this issue and that they want to get involved and they want to see action.
John, how's the public been receiving this information so far? We've heard a lot about climate change. WJCT has this ADAPT website. But still, there are people out there that don't believe that we have a crisis. We're at the crossroads of a crisis.
Well, you know, Charles, I've been struck in the last 6 months really getting involved with this issue that my sense of it is there's many people out there who are very concerned about climate change. If anything, they're just looking for a way to connect and get involved with some group or some organization to work on various aspects of climate change. There are people who are doubtful about it, but I think, you know, I think we've reached a point here in Jacksonville where those people are moving into the minority. I mean, we've got a lot of good actions going. We've got three or four new groups springing up. I think that hesitation is fast roading.
Yeah, tell us about Green Spirits. What, you know, what are they? I know they're an advocacy group, but kind of dig deeper or give the public a little idea of what types of work, advocacy work they're engaged in right now.
Well, we're really just starting. I mean, we've had about four meetings. Dean Kate Moorhead at the Cathedral really kind of sparked this, along with Joanne Tredenick, a member of the church. And what we're doing is once a month we've been meeting and showing climate change type of films and having discussions like with Adam. So we're really, you know, I have to tell you, we're kind of getting our footing right now and trying to figure out exactly what we want to do. But, you know, somebody, one of the reasons we wanted to have Adam speak to us is he's so knowledgeable and he's got, you know, some really good action ideas. So we're really looking forward to hearing him tonight.
Okay. We have Bill in Mandarin. Bill, good morning. You're on First Coast Connect.
Yeah. Reason I called, I did a little keeping of data over the last 12 months and found that Jacksonville had an excess of 1,230 degrees built up heat and just wondered where all that heat goes.
Thank you for that question, Bill. Adam, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, so it's a great question. In general, what happens is the extra heat that gets trapped on the planet because of greenhouse gas emissions that our activities are putting into the atmosphere, most of that heat ends up in water bodies. It ends up in the ocean because water is just better at holding heat than the air is. So I think the numbers are about 90% of the heat ends up in the ocean. And of course, here in Jacksonville, we have the ocean on one side, right? We have the river going through. And so it's we're a place where heat gets trapped relatively easily. And so that's why we're going to see a lot of warming over the coming years. But that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Councilwoman DeFore, a lot of this information is interesting, and the work that the Resiliency Committee is doing is important. But what in terms of policy, how hard is that going to be to get the public behind if we come up with some ideas that we know that are going to be aggressive but necessary?
I think the public is ready for policy. I think that's part of the frustration by the public is that nothing has been done. And so, you know, a big part of it is just going to be educating people like myself as to figuring out what we need to do.
Okay. We have another call. Joshua is in San Marco. Good morning, Joshua.
They've been thinking about doing for...
Good morning, Joshua. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was wondering what kind of nature-based solutions you guys have been thinking about in terms of helping Jacksonville become more resilient and sustainable.
Okay, thank you for that question, Joshua, and appreciate your call. Adam, I'll let you handle that one as well, since you're the expert.
Yeah, there's a ton of nature-based solutions that are on the table. I don't know what the city has talked about or is really considering, but just from sort of a science perspective, you know, the nature-based solutions are sometimes some of the best solutions, such as, you know, planting a ton of trees in the city to absorb excess carbon and also reduce the sort of heat-trapping capacity of the city. Also allowing coastal areas along the river and along the ocean, along the beaches, to remain natural, right? Because those areas are really important for buffering us from storms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard a lot about other communities doing just those types of things, and I want to thank you very much for being here, Adam Rosenblatt and John Burr and Councilwoman Randy DeFore. Thank you for sticking around.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be back on First Coast Connect. Next, we'll be talking about the Universal Circus.
Congaree and Penn offers an elevated farm setting for private events. With all-encompassing farm-to-table culinary service, the farm's acres are a unique backdrop for special occasions. More at congareeandpenn.com.
Earth Pets. Since 1979, a local pet supply store on San Jose Boulevard in Mandarin. And now with a brand new San Marco location. Earth Pets offers natural foods and treats, holistic supplements, eco-friendly toys, and experienced nutritional guidance.
WJCT invites you to join us for an evening with Ari Shapiro on Thursday, April 2nd. Award-winning journalist and weekday co-host of All Things Considered, NPR's award-winning afternoon news program, will join WJCT's president and CEO, David McGowan, for an engaging conversation. Visit wjct.org/events for ticket information. Sponsored by the Community Foundation for Northeast Florida.
Census workers are preparing to count the homeless population, but the growing coronavirus outbreak could complicate their efforts.
One, workers could be reluctant to go to a place where the homeless receive services. Two, the places could be reluctant to let people in.
How the coronavirus could affect the census, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
For millions of Americans, going to the office each day now means staying at home. The impact of coronavirus is being felt in workplaces across the country. But in a gig economy, how do you stay afloat when the world you rely on disappears behind closed doors? I'm Todd Zwillick, Home and Alone. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. You still have a few more days to catch the Universal Circus, which is full of one-of-a-kind performances from around the world. And here in Jacksonville, we have the world-famous Zeke, the ringmaster. Right?
And I don't know about that world-famous.
and Cheyenne Rose Daly, the co-ringmaster, right, joining us here in the studio. Welcome to Jacksonville. Welcome back to Jacksonville, I should say.
Thank you for having us.
So tell us about the show. I know I just asked you how many years it's been since you've been here, but you've taken a few years off, but we're happy to have you back.
Well, we're trying to branch out and do as many cities as possible, and I'm going to let our first only female ringmaster,
all right,
Cheyenne, tell you a little bit about the show.
Yes, well, being the most interactive circus in the world, we offer so many different types of acts under the big top. You can see different acts like teeterboard acts, we have acrobatic acts, we have high wire walkers, we have a guy who hangs at least 35 feet in the air. We have motorcycles that jump from one end of the tent to the other end of the tent, along with fire limbo dancers and many, many more other talents that you could see under the big top.
Yeah, you all are very unique in the acts that you offer. And I was telling you before that before we got on the air that I took my kids every year when they were little,
correct,
because they're 30 now, but you also have the tradition of bringing local people into the ring with you.
Yes as Cheyenne was saying, and speaking of Cheyenne, y'all noticed that accent, right?
Yes. I did.
She's from Trinidad and Tobago, and she also has another hat. She's one of our gorgeous Caribbean dancer.
All right.
That's right.
Yes. And like you said, we're the most interactive circus. We go into the audience, bring members into the audience. You don't just sit, they actually become a part of the show. You're another element of our fantastic offers that we have.
Yeah, so very exciting. And you all do a great job of entertaining the kids. You know, folks are just, I remember seeing how the kids look up at you, Zeke, and how you entertain the crowd. It's very exciting. How did the circus originate?
Well, the gentleman by the name of Mr. Cedric Walker, we're based in Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. The gentleman by the name of Mr. Cedric Walker, he was a great promoter back in Atlanta, or still is a great promoter,
because
he's promoting the circus. But he was a promoter doing plays and concerts, and he noticed that in the African community, a lot of people were coming, bringing their families out to the plays. So he came up with a concept of taking your traditional style circus and add a little soul flavor to it. And here we are 27 years later, traveling the world.
Wow. So you're going to be on a swing here in the South. Or you mentioned that you're going to be other cities around Jacksonville.
Yes, if you go to our website, we just came out of Miami and Tampa, working our way up the East Coast, next is the Carolinas, then Midwest, and on and on and on and on.
And how much longer are you here in Jacksonville?
We're here
until Sunday the 15th.
Sunday the 15th. Very good. And how much are the tickets? You can go to the website, but how much are the tickets?
Well, the tickets range from different prices. It all depends on where you're sitting at and what day you're coming. We have morning show, and then we have evening show, matinee shows. They go to our website, www.universalsoulcircus.com. Or Ticketmaster, but if you want to save that service charge, come to our box office.
That's right.
On location. We have a box office on location, no service charge. So when they always ask for that hookup, I tell them, come to the box office, and we'll give you all the hookup you want, no service charge.
Okay, what's your favorite act? part of the show?
Well, Cheyenne is sitting here, so I can't say that. My favorite, I don't know, I've been there for 27 years, and it is awesome to see the acts that come in, mm-hmm. and every time they blow my mind. Speaking of one particular act, like she was saying, it was Guy Weber. He's from Brazil. Mm-hmm. He's like a spider that hangs up on a net.
Wow.
This man is climbing across one end of the ring to the other end of the ring.
With no safety net.
Wow.
Net.
Wow.
Hanging down by his feet. Wow. That is awesome.
I know that you have some very unique acts. You're very unique. And, you know, I'm kind of goofy for the high wire acts, the trapeze artists and things like that. And it really mesmerizes the kids as well. It brings, like you said, all of us are kids at heart. So it really makes a difference. And it's very entertaining.
Yep. And it was also for the kids. Everybody know about Fresh the Clowns, FTC. Of all you all you parents out there, ask your kid about FTC. Most kids know about them, Juju on the Beat and Famous Dancers that they're doing. They're one of our highlights also. We have the motorcycle Daredevil acts. They go from one side of the ring to the other side of the ring, about 60 feet up in the air. I mean, call volley from one side to the next. I mean, it's exciting. Along with our animals that we have, the zebras, the camels, we've got a dog act. I mean, we're just... wholesome family entertainment.
I put Zeke on the spot. Cheyenne, what's your favorite?
Act? I don't want to be biased, but my favorites would have to be the Caribbean acts.
There you go.
Yes, because in our Caribbean acts, we don't just have one group of people from the Caribbean. We have members from many different islands in the Caribbean, such as Jamaica, Barbados, Antigua and Barbuda, and where I'm from, Trinidad and Tobago. Okay. And in this act, we have so many different components. We started off with these beautiful carnival costumes that represents carnival, a season that we portray back home. And then we get into the mokojambis. These are stilt walkers who walk on stilts that are like 5 to 6 feet tall. So they are approximately 10 feet high in the air, dancing and parading around. Then we go into our other carnival characters, and then we end it off with our fire limbo. Okay. We start off with a fire limbo bar, and it drops all the way down to at least 4 inches.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We appreciate it and enjoy. We're going to look forward to seeing the show. Appreciate you being here. I'm Charles Griggs, sitting in for Melissa Ross, and you've been listening to First Coast Connect. We'll be back 9 a.m. live from the Players tomorrow morning. The TPC, TPC Sawgrass in Ponte Vedra. Yes, we're going to have some fun with golf. I'll be out there, too, and you'll see me on the 17th Challenge.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.